Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Adrian Weckler, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brendan.
And Adrian, people know you as a technology journalist, so they might expect us to be discussing something very techy now, but we're not. Why did you decide you wanted to visit every state in America before you turned 50?
Well, the US has always been part of me. I was born there. My parents, my dad is American, still lives north of Chicago. My mother and he met in college over there. And then a few things in my life happened right throughout my teens, 20s and 30s, and then finally 40, that really gave me the itch to see every single state by the time I was 50. So at the age of 40, I had seen about 10 or 11 of them, had spent a lot of time there through work, through visiting my dad, through for other reasons. I worked there myself as well. And then at the age of 40, I decided I'd really like to see every state and do something meaningful in every state, have something to remember them all by.
Okay. When you say things happened, do you want to tell us any of the things that
happened? Yeah, sure. The first thing, I mean, I worked in Yellowstone Park when I was 19. That came about because my mother was a friend of a woman called Valerie Hemingway, who is an Irish woman called Valerie Danby Smith, who married Hemingway's son. She's Irish.
Right.
And she was a friend of my mother's, and she came over to stay with us one time, and she brought over application forms for Yellowstone. I filled them out. This was pre-internet times. Went over, worked, stayed in the Hemingway Ranch in Montana. Then worked in Yellowstone for a few months. Made some incredible friends there. Had a girlfriend, the all-American girlfriend, who turned out to be a separatist. But anyway, that's a different story. And that really gave me the itch. I went on a road trip with a guy from Texas across some of the northern states, up through Montana, through Idaho, down to Washington State, California, Oregon, right down into Nevada. And that gave me the itch for the U.S., the road less traveled. So that was the first big thing. The second big thing happened then, I suppose, when I turned 40 and figured out that we probably weren't going to have kids at that point. Now I'm very happy. I've got a great family, my wife and stepdaughter, love them a lot. And I decided at that point that I was going to do something else as well. If I wasn't going to be staying up at night minding the baby, I was going to be in Nebraska or Florida or Alaska or, you know, Mississippi.
Okay. You mentioned your mother, the late Deirdre Purcell, who died earlier this year. I gather your mother loved America as well, like the road trip, yeah?
I mean, if you gave her a car and an open road, that was her heaven. It's actually her 6-month anniversary today. So shout out to Kevin, who's probably listening, Kevin Healy, her husband, my stepfather. She absolutely adored the US. She had this romantic vision of it. When I was working in Yellowstone and I was due to come back to do a law degree, she actually told me on the phone, "Why don't you stay over there?" And it wasn't because she wanted me out of the house. It was because she just loved the States. She could hear in my voice that there was a sense of adventure there, of opportunity. Yeah. And she loved it, yeah.
I obviously knew of your mother in a certain way, but I had no real idea of her as a person. But it was a piece you wrote. Her engagement with the world and with people and everything, it was full on, wasn't it? Like she was into everything. Like
she was into everything. I mean, she's one of the few people I knew who blew up her own career every 8 or 9 years. So she was an actor in the Abbey Theatre. She then came to work for RTE. She was the first female anchor of the 9 o'clock news in the early 80s. Kind of set for life, if you think about it. And then Vincent Brown came and asked her, would she become a journalist in the Sunday Tribune? And she did. She left RTE, became a journalist in the Tribune. And then she left that to become a novelist, screenwriter as well. She gave Colin Farrell his first big screen break in Falling for a Dancer, the BBC miniseries. So her life was a series of adventures, something, the bravery of which I can kind of barely understand, but she really just wanted to seize opportunities. And she made friends all over the world as well as a result of that. That's why she became friendly with Valerie Hemingway, for example.
Yeah, yeah. So, and so part of that adventurousness anyway is you and your love of the open road. I'm getting a sense as well of that, like America does wilderness really well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And big, like we think of it as this very built up modern place, but actually there's these amazing expanses as well, isn't there?
I mean, I would just urge anyone to take a road trip from, say, Colorado Springs, for example,
okay,
through Kansas, through the prairies of Kansas into Missouri, or even better, if you go to Las Vegas. Some Irish people listening to this will maybe go to Las Vegas. Take a road trip to a small town called Sedona in Arizona. It's 5 hours across the desert. It's like being in a movie. It's like being in a dream. It's like every Eagle song you've ever heard in your life. There are areas of the states where, from the Dakotas right the way down through Nebraska and Kansas and down into New Mexico, size of Italy and France and Germany combined, with 2 or 3 million people living in it. The vast open expanses are kind of hard for us to imagine, especially when they're right beside the Rocky Mountains, which are spectacular. Or, you know, you go over to the East Coast and you've got the Blue Ridge Mountains, the Smoky Mountains. I mean, one of the dreamiest things you can do is take a drive along the Blue Ridge Mountains in, you know, eastern Tennessee or West Virginia. I did that a few months ago at sunset. It's like being in a painting, a Renaissance painting.
You see, we've got locked into a certain narrative and relationship with America recently, which is not a great one, right? And then you mention all those places and the romance of those things. And like you say, movies, everything growing up, the romance of all those places through music and everything. I believe you got into bluegrass in America.
There's nothing. I went to a town called Harper's Ferry in West Virginia.
Yeah.
And West Virginia is a fascinating state because we know about the social problems there. You know, anyone who has seen Dope Sick, but it's stunning natural beauty there, beautiful mountains. And the music, I heard a bluegrass band there and it was like nothing I'd ever heard in my life. And I ended up getting into bluegrass when we returned to the mountains. We went to a city called Asheville in North Carolina. And the first thing I did was made a beeline for a bar where I knew there was some bluegrass music playing. And now I kind of visit bluegrass festivals in Ireland as a result.
Okay. Now, you mentioned then the other side of that is the Dope Sick phenomenon. Is that a huge part of the texture of that part of America, the whole opioid crisis?
It is. You see it when you drive through the central states, the eastern states, the poorer parts of those regions. You see towns that are hollowed out, main streets that have, where half the shops are boarded up. There's a huge amount of poverty in the states. It's a really weird place because there's massive wealth, but at the same time, Americans have kind of gated themselves off into suburbs a little bit, and those who are left in the towns end up being much more vulnerable to things like that. Some of the poverty that I've seen there, I've never seen anything like it in Europe. I remember being in Jackson, Mississippi.
Yeah.
And there's a whole part of the city which is like, it's like bombed out Palestine or something. I've never seen anything like it in my life. It's not the kind of the homelessness that you see in the Western cities, Seattle, San Francisco. That's a different thing altogether.
Okay.
It's just sheer poverty. It's just, it's people who have nothing.
Okay. But that does bring us on to this notion we hear about Detroit, for example, center of it, Holocaust. We're seeing this narrative around San Francisco now, the doom loop, as the city center seems to be becoming like a way more of a no-go area than anything here. Is that something you've seen?
Yeah. Most towns and cities that I have visited in the last few years, including the richest ones, I mentioned San Francisco, for example, are often no-go areas now, during the day as well as during the night. Chicago is the city that I'm most familiar with because that's where I was born. That's where my dad lives. I go there almost every year. The North Side Chicago is like some kind of American nirvana utopia. It's a beautiful place. It's wealthy. There's lots of shops. There's cafes. Go to the South Side and It's gun violence, it's deaths, it's murders, it's, you know, carjackings. It's a very, very weird thing. It's very upsetting, you know, when you go there.
Because it is a mythical place to Irish people, and we do think of it as the ultimate first world country and everything. But clearly there's this massive contradictions and differences there. And
yeah, I can't get my head around it. And I tried to have conversations with people over there about it, and they just don't believe in a sense of cohesion the way we do. I don't know if you've ever been to Houston in Texas, but
no.
Houston used to be 50 years ago a really nice downtown city, a little bit like old LA, and now it's just basically a car park. They've just given up entirely on the idea of any sort of city center. It's all about just, you know, a handful of suburbs. San Jose, where I go almost every year for the Apple launches, the iPhone, I'll probably be going there in a few weeks' time again. You know, the romantic San Jose of the 60s, it's a bunch of car parks now.
Okay.
It's really, really weird.
So it's changing in extraordinary ways that people mightn't be aware of. By the way, one thing I have been thinking the last week is I have no sense of Hawaii, of what kind of a place it is or anything. And I suppose we're getting a bit of a sense of it now. Did you go to Hawaii?
I was there 2 months ago. It was my last state. It was the 50th state before I'm 50.
Yeah.
I wanted to finish it off. Now, I went to the Big Island, which is the one with most of the volcanoes on it, and it's the one with the big observatories on it. We went up to 10,000 feet, where you're above the pollution level, you can see the stars, all that sort of stuff. And there's an active volcano there. We had dinner looking at lava and fumes coming from the volcano. There was no sense of the devastation we've seen in Maui at that point. But it's very similar in terms of the way the island is. It's basically a couple of big mountains, and most of the population is around the rims. And Hawaii is a really weird one, because if you go to Honolulu, for example, there's huge social problems there, massive homelessness. A lot of the eastern cities 10, 20 years ago flew a lot of homeless people out to Hawaii because they knew they'd never get back.
Really?
Yeah. They did the same in San Francisco. They bussed them over to the West Coast, and they're doing the same now in Texas. They're bussing border crossing immigrants. They're bussing them up to quote unquote blue cities. What they're saying to them is, well, if
yeah, this is a political statement.
Political statement. Yeah. But Hawaii is, I had very low expectations of Hawaii. I just thought it was going to be like a Disneyland for, you know, pensioners and cruise liners. And it was a little bit that, but it was also, I mean, there's not much like swimming in the warm water of a Hawaii beach. We swam, and there were turtles underneath us, just regularly turtles just swimming around. It is kind of a little bit like everything you would imagine it would be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But of course, this was back when we kind of still had the notion that we had conquered nature and that it was going to behave. And
I mean, and the Americans are the worst deniers of that, even though they're feeling it as much or more than we are. A week doesn't go by where there's another tornado or a hurricane or a major flooding event or wildfires or something that can't really be explained by natural patterns. And the Americans, you see, you have to understand, like, for Americans, nature is something that is in far more abundance than it is in Europe. Like, we largely kind of built over most of nature.
Yeah.
And right. In the States, they didn't. I mean, they mostly kept it to cities and towns. And yes, there are homesteads and there are ranches. And there's, in states like Texas, for example, like 98% of the land is privately owned, which was a deal that the government originally did to try and protect against invaders from Mexico or Native Americans. But they see these giant mountain ranges, these beautiful rivers, these incredible landscapes. And they think, well, yeah, there was flooding, you know, over there. But look at all of this. They're not conscious of it in a way that we are.
Okay. Tell me a bit about the South. I haven't been. I think New Orleans is the place most people dream of going to, the food. And I suppose we have a notion of the South on one hand, of this elegance and an old school kind of, you know, grandiose civility and all that, and then on the other hand, Confederate flags and rednecks and stuff.
It is absolutely both of those things. I saw more Confederate flags in the last few years driving around states like Kentucky, which wasn't actually in the Confederacy originally, Tennessee, Georgia, the Carolinas. I visited a museum in South Carolina, which was effectively a Confederacy museum run by the Daughters of the Confederacy, which is an organization which is still going with all of the, you know, heroic tales of soldiers' deeds and all that stuff from their point of view. On the other hand, there is still a civility and manners down there, which was kind of undeniable. I was visiting a place in Alabama called Muscle Shoals, which is a town where a lot of musicians go to. So you two have been there, and it was kind of up there at the time with Sun City in Memphis, Tennessee, as a place where you would go to record your stuff. And I decided to take a day trip to a plantation house nearby. So this would have been one of these big, you know, Django Unchained style houses with where there were slaves and hundreds or thousands of acres. And it was closed for the day. When I knocked on the door, kind of a Southern dame answered, asked me who I was and why I was there. And I said, I'm really, really sorry. I hammed up the accent a bit. I came all the way from Ireland, and I was just wondering if I was hoping if I get. And as soon as she heard the accent, she brought me in. She gave me a private tour. She introduced me to her friends. She had her friends over. They were having a tea party. I mean, if you can believe that. They ended up putting me up on their Facebook pages, you know, as their guest from Ireland. So part of that was the exotic nature to them of somebody from Ireland visiting their small place in Alabama. But part of it was also a sense of just, you know, gentility.
Yeah. So you touch on something interesting here, which is, again, and this is our kind of very kind of maybe simple narratives we have around America, which is that there are good people and there are bad people. Most people in Ireland would tend to think there are good people who, you know, vote Democrat, and then there are bad people who are Trumpian, kind of racist and everything. I presume it's a bit more nuanced than that. I presume you met many nice people who are Trumpians and vice versa.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I met lifelong friends over there. I'm godfather to two kids now over there who live in Maine. And Maine is a funny state because it's a little bit like those states in the Southeast. There's great wealth and there's great poverty. And among the people who are the poorest, they're most likely to be the Trump supporters. So driving around, you will see Trump flags, Trump 2024. You'll go into some bars or diners and there's, you know, working people in there, and you'll see fridge magnets with Trump, and you'll see, you know, Hillary should be locked up, you know, Hunter Biden this, Hunter Biden that. And one of my friends over there is not a Trump supporter, but a Republican, and buys into this narrative that, you know, people have it too easy. And this friend is not wealthy, but they would prefer to see somebody less well off than themselves have to work for, you know, what they earn than get some more themselves. It's a really weird mindset. I find it very difficult to understand it, but I'm still friends with them.
Yeah, yeah. Someone's asking, can I ask you, is it safe to take an RV across parts of the States? My husband retires next year, and this is one of the things we thought we might do.
I mean, absolutely. It really is. It's actually set up very well for RVs and motor homes, as we call them over here. There are parks everywhere. The facilities are really good. There are communities there as well of people. Like, I remember getting a tour in New Mexico near Roswell from a retired couple from Michigan who now lived in an RV. And they didn't do it out of poverty. They did it because as a lifestyle choice. And they went around the States working in different parks and different locations, giving tours. And it's a wonderful thing to do, to do a cross America trip. I would highly advise it.
You see, there's someone here saying, unfortunately, a lot of the USA has sacrificed itself on the altar of individualism, right? But on the other hand, there is, like those people you mentioned there is a rugged individualism about them that we kind of don't have. They're much less conformist in a way than we are, aren't they? Or less cynical or something as well?
Absolutely. So it's really weird. America's a great place to go to sell something because they believe you. They're not as cynical. They don't think that you're trying to trick them most of the time. And there is just this sense of freedom over there. And even as I'm saying it, I know that makes me sound like a bit of a weirdo.
You see, this is it. But this feeds into the other narratives then, the Trumpian stuff.
I'll give you an example. There's almost nowhere you can go in the States where there isn't a toilet. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, what I mean by that is it's a place that enables you to go anywhere, do anything, travel anywhere, and it will still there'll still be something to support you in doing what you want to do. And it's just a different mindset. Over here, we've things closed, things shut, that you can't go here. There's problems there. There's a historical legacy there. In the States, you can kind of do anything.
Okay. Lots of texts of people kind of, I think more about the romantic side of America. Mm. I used to love America. I've been in 25 states, so many memories, the pine forests of Washington State, the desert in Arizona, pizza in Chicago, driving down the valley of the Rappahannock River, coffee in Fredericksburg in Virginia, where some of the Irish Brigade died. Mm. And then that person says, but the States the last few years, Trump fascism, I don't know if I'll ever go back. But there are people, and I think Irish people, a lot of people as well, the J1 and everything, there are people who have wonderful kind of associations with America. What are the things you love most about it? The wilderness and the wide open space is obviously one of those things.
Okay, so you can't look past Alaska. Alaska is everything you've ever heard, seen, or read.
Really, yeah?
It is absolutely breathtaking. I flew into Anchorage from Chicago, and from Chicago, Anchorage is almost as far as Dublin is on a flight. And then there are almost no roads in Alaska. It's like three quarters of the state has no roads at all. So I immediately took a small seaplane 2.5 hours past smoking kind of snow-capped volcanoes down into a bay. We got out, we took a boat over to the beach. It was like a sound, and the bears were just starting to come out of hibernation. So we saw the bears and the bear cubs and bald eagle, and like there was nothing set up about this. It is literally a frontier wilderness. So I would thoroughly recommend Alaska's expensive to get there though. There are a couple of other places. I mean, I mentioned Sedona in Arizona. It's an oasis in the desert. If you like that kind of landscape, it's absolutely amazing. But I mean, like places we haven't even talked about. I mentioned Memphis, that whole Mississippi Delta. If you like music, it's just in your bones. You're traveling down, driving along the river there, and the radio stations. It's just another world.
Yeah.
And then obviously there's Chicago, beautiful Art Deco. I'll never get tired of sitting in Grant Park in Chicago, looking at the 20 skyscrapers and all the Frank Lloyd Wright stuff and the East Coast as well. Look, the only place I would say not to go is Indiana. Indiana is the most boring state in the US.
Okay. Hopefully they're not listening, so I won't have to read out 10 texts. Food-wise?
Yeah, food. So I had the best fish I ever had in Louisiana, in New Orleans. They have a beautiful Creole down there. Someone mentioned their pizza in Chicago. God, where do you even start with food? See, I'm a fan of the diners. The morning diners, afternoon diners, evening diners. And no matter what city you go to, there's always one spectacular diner. So that's what I would do. That's what I do when I go.
Yeah. Steak and eggs is a great thing to have in America for your breakfast. Listen, I want to go on a road trip there right now. So look, we're not ignoring that there are all those problems everywhere. We talked about that. Mm. But there still is that marvelous romance and broad canvas of America is there. And like people are going off to Far East and far-flung places to find that kind of thing. But it's all there in an English-speaking country.
It's a beautiful, amazing country. And most of the people I know who spend time there and come back, whether it's just a couple of months or whether it's a year or two, they end up being changed, often for the better, in a way that doesn't happen if you go off to, you know, Thailand or maybe Australia, I don't know. There's this can-do thing in the States. And for all of the bad stuff, and there's loads of bad stuff, That's a real.
It opens the mind, doesn't it? Yeah. And I remember, like, even when we went on the J1, and originally you're going, what's wrong with all these people? They're all being friends with us instantly, and Irish people are so cynical and everything. There's a guy going, like, here, take my car. I mean, if you want to go off for the weekend and everything. And then you go, no, hang on a minute.
They believe in you.
These people are amazing, yeah. So listen, every kind of journey and project like this is an inner journey as well, isn't it? Did you find what you were looking for, or do you know what you were looking for?
Yeah, I think so. So it was the adventure of a lifetime. I mean, I always had this itch about, you know, would I move to the States right up till a year or two ago? Would we go and live in the US? Would we finally make that move? And the part of me has always felt that maybe I should have, because I am part American, and maybe that's where I'm supposed to be. I think because some of the states I visited were when I was really young, like I represented my school playing basketball in Pennsylvania when I was 14. You wouldn't think to look at me now, but I was actually a good basketball player at the age of 14. And there's some states I don't have great memories of, or particularly in-depth memories of. So now I'm compiling a sub-list of three or four states that I maybe should go back and spend more time in, and maybe think about a book or something, yeah.
Yeah, there's a book in this,
maybe,
isn't there?
Yeah.
Listen, I'm exhilarated. I feel wild after that. Adrian Weckler, thank you very much. And you are, of course, a technology editor with the Irish and Sunday Independent. We should mention that. We'll take a break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.